Public Safety Policy and Finance today, Wednesday, April 13, 2005. And we're almost prepared to take the roll. Clerk, take the roll.
Chairman Smith.
Here.
Representative Eastland. Harnish. Ellison.
Here.
Hillstrom.
Here.
Johnson. Meslow. Murphy.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
Newman.
Here.
Kamar.
Here.
Soderstrom.
We'll go to the minutes as soon as we achieve a quorum. We're going to do some budget reviews this morning. I'd like to just let everyone in the room know that we do have session at noon, so we will conclude by 11:45 to give the members the time and ability to get to the floor. I'm going to just do one item out of order. Mr. David Paul, Executive Secretary of the Minnesota Board of Judicial Standards, I know you have a short staff today, so I'd like to honor your request to be first and be brief, and please, you have the floor. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our deal is that I'm going to speak for under 5 minutes, and it's a deal I intend to keep. I just want to reiterate what I've said here before on several occasions this winter and now this spring. The board is requesting an increase in its biennial appropriation of $50,000 from $504,000 to $554,000. This is to fund the board's most important activity as required by law, the only activity that is totally required by law, and that is to conduct a prompt and timely public disciplinary hearing when necessary, when usually demanded by the judge. The judge, of course, or judicial officers of any type have a unconditional right to challenge anything the board does through a public hearing. And the last time we did this, we had to wait 11 months for our funding. It's nobody's fault. Everybody knows what is going on with the funding situation. But we do need some money to get started. And I think the committee should just consider this money is being appropriated now or being appropriated later. This is going to be spent in the biennium regardless. And as long as we're going to spend it, why don't we spend it in a way that will give judges and the public and the complainants the due process they deserve and get these things going quickly and out of the way so that everybody can move on. If a judge violated the rules, he or she ought to know that. If a judge didn't violate the rules, he or she ought to know that too. For those who complain, they are entitled to that information also. So I'm asking that you consider very seriously our increase in appropriation. Be happy to take any questions or any.
Mr. Paul, just one question from the chair. But for the issue you discussed today, and you did tell us about this earlier in the year, Governor's recommendations that are before us are adequate to run your operation, but for that one item you've asked in addition.
That is correct.
All right. Any questions, Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Paul, how much did your rent go up this year?
To the chair.
Mr. Paul.
I think it went up 8% this year, and it's going to go up about the same amount over the next 2 years.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Paul, each year it's going to go up 8%, or so 16%, 8% and 16%?
I think, through the chair, I think it's going to be about 16% over the next 3 years, not including. That's my recollection. I have exact figures, I just don't seem to have them with me right now. I can provide that for you exactly.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm on the rent thing this year.
Okay.
Any other questions? If not, Mr. Paul, thank you for your time. If questions arise in the next few days, we'll contact you by phone or by mail.
Please do. Thank you, sir.
Let's move then to the Supreme Court of the state, Honorable Edward Lynch, Judge Dakota County I've listed here, as well as Pseudocel State Court Administrator. While you're coming up, we're going to revert on our agenda to the minutes of the previous meeting, April 8th, as well as April 11, 2005. They are in the packet. Representative Newman moves approval of both of those sets of minutes. Any discussion? If not, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Welcome, Judge Lynch and Pseudocel. We are on somewhat of a tight schedule. We've kind of got 15 minutes set aside for each of your portions, so please go ahead. Okay. Judge Toussaint as well. Excuse me. I apologize. Budget review, Supreme Court.
Mr. Chair, we're going to kind of have a handout for you, I believe, that has PowerPoint slides that kind of organizes our requests. Just by way of context, I wanted to make just a couple of points that we've talked about in the past. Obviously, you know that the judiciary is a core function of government, and by Constitution, we are mandated to handle all cases that come in our door promptly and without delay. And that's all cases, not just criminal cases, but civil cases as well. And, of course, we have no control over the caseloads that are coming in and from prosecutors and from individuals and from corporations. Several years ago, the legislative auditor reported to you, after months of study of the trial courts, that the trial courts were operating inefficiently, and not only that, but Minnesota judges handle caseloads that are 49% higher than the average of judges in comparable states, 49% higher. So I think that gives you comfort to know that this is a lean operation. Now then, in this current biennium, we took a $17 million cut to our previous base budget. In addition, we absorbed $10 million in employee salary increases and insurance increases. And to take all of that, we cut our very small operating budgets below the bone and implemented a hiring freeze in the beginning of the biennium, and now we're operating with something like 200 vacancies at any given time. Our case filings continue to grow, as we indicated in our previous overview. In the last 5 years, our criminal caseload has increased by 50%. As a result, backlogs and delay are beginning to be felt. Just in 1 year, between 2003 and 2004, our average time to disposition in criminal cases jumped by 50%. And, of course, this is important not just because justice delayed is justice denied, but it is because the only thing that has been shown empirically to have an impact on recidivism is the shortness in time between the event, the criminal incident, and the imposition of a judicial sanction. So this is important for all of us. Not only has this delay been felt in the litigation realm, but also just in our service to the public. At our counters, there are places now where it's taking an hour and a half to 2 hours wait in line to get papers filed at our counters. And we're seeing things like, important things, like criminal history information not being put into our computers for days and sometimes weeks. And this is a public safety issue. So that's the context of the request that we bring before you. We have four areas of request, and we're going to kind of move through those. As I indicated in my prior testimony here, this request is not a wish list or a nice-to-have list. It is only what critically is necessary to do our and maintain the constitutional mission that we're all about, handling that mountain of cases that are flowing into our courts every single day promptly and without delay. We understood putting together this budget that there were going to be continuing deficits in 06 and 07, and that's why we are not asking for the 9 and now 10 new judges that we need under the weighted caseload. We are not asking for the restoration of the positions lost because of the budget cuts in the current biennium or any new positions in this budget, no new positions. We're not asking for money to expand these promising approaches to handling cases in the criminal area and the juvenile area, criminal CJI, Children's Justice Initiative, the mental health courts, the drug courts, none of that. We're asking only for what we absolutely need to keep our heads above water. And so those four areas include, on slide two, mandated services, court interpreters, psych services, child support, the use of retired judges in the Court of Appeals, and to maintain our core justice operation, and that means just keeping the staff we have right now. On slide three of the handout, this is our first request, which is for funding for court interpreters. It appears on page nine of the trial court request for your budget book. $300,000 in the first year and $600,000 in the second year. As you know, it is the legislative policy of this state that interpreter services be provided to persons who are handicapped in communication. And the reason for this is that there obviously can be no justice without comprehension, and that's what this is all about. This past decade, as we talked about in our overview, has seen a dramatic increase in the demand for court interpreter services, a tenfold increase. In the last 4 years, the annual cost of court interpreters has grown by 11% per year. The request that we have here before you represents about a 16% increase for the biennium. And I would stand for any questions that you might have about that request.
Any questions? See none.
The second one on slide four of our handout is psychological services. We're asking for $376,000 in the first year, $500,000 in the second year. And as you know, by statute, the courts are required to pay the court-related costs for examinations under Rule 20 of the Rules of Criminal Procedure. These are competency exams. And also for exams that are performed as part of the civil commitment process. And this includes commitments, persons who are mentally ill and dangerous, persons with sexual psychopathic personalities, and sexually dangerous persons. As Dr. Panciera mentioned to you the last time we were here, we are experiencing very significant increases in the number of civil commitment filings, and especially in the sex offender cases. The growth in the cost of psych services for the courts has been 50% since fiscal year 02 when we took over this as a state cost. The growth is the result of the increased commitment petitions under the sexual psychopath or sexually dangerous person statutes, also from the limited number of qualified professionals that we have to do this kind of work, and from the increased fees for the exams. On average, we have been experiencing a 16% increase per year in these costs. What we're asking for represents a 14% increase in the biennium. It may be too modest, but it is certainly a much-needed area of funding to deal with what we're experiencing in the courts and what is flowing from the legislative policy. I'd stand for questions about that.
Anything on this point? Questions? There are none. Go ahead.
On slide five, child support process. We're asking for $190,000 in the first year and $280,000 in the second year. As you know, federal law requires that all states have an expedited child support process for the adjudication of 4D cases to establish, modify, and enforce child support. Since 1999, this program has been part of the judicial branch, and we have been using primarily child support magistrates primarily on a contract basis to address the guideline child support, medical support, and also in many of these cases, child care contributions. Now, the state appropriation pays for 34% of this, and we receive the remaining 66% from the feds. So for every $1 the state provides, $2 additional dollars come from the federal government. Now, the other important thing I think to know is that there has been no increase since 1998 in the state appropriation of $1,174,000. But we have been experiencing and absorbing a 78% increase in our workload. So in the past 7 years, we've had no increase in our budget, but we have absorbed a huge increase in our workload, and we've done that by implementing a number of reforms and efficiencies throughout the state. But we have now hit a wall here. The growth in these number of the workload in this area are due to a number of factors, but the big one is that once child support is established, any party has the right to petition for a review and modification of that situation. And this is based on life's changing conditions, things like, you know, we lost a job, we got a new job, we entered military service, became disabled, incurred medical expenses, and the list goes on. And, of course, this is open to anyone through the entire life of a child up to the age of 18. And so as we experience particular changes in the economic situation, either upward or downward, the workload of the child support magistrates increase. And, of course, that's what we are now experiencing and have been. Now we have a 60-day time frame to handle these cases from the filing of the petition to the end under our rules. Until last year, we have been able to handle those pretty well. Last year, now we're seeing that we're, with some consistency, exceeding these time frames. For example, in Washington County in 2003, they had one case that exceeded the 60-day time requirement. In 2004, fully 22% or 135 of their cases exceeded that time frame. So we can't absorb the increasing workload now and still stay within those time frames that are very important to the children and to the families involved. And I would stand for questions on that.
On this section, any questions? I see none. Go ahead.
And Mr. Chair, the next request is on slide 6, and it relates
excuse me,
to...
Could I just ask one question, maybe? Where is this in the budget book? Is it says on page 8, and it's not on page 8 that I don't see. Is there a...
The retired judge?
No, the expedited child support process.
It's on page 9 of the Supreme Court.
Well, Supreme piece. Court.
Right.
Okay, I got it. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mrs. Sal.
And slide 6 is our next request, which relates to retired judge funding usage for the Court of Appeals, and I'd ask Chief Judge Edward Toussaint to speak to that.
Morning, Judge.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for allowing us to appear again this morning. Since last I was here, there have been some developments on our court that what we have been seeing. The increase in filings in the trial court is finally catching up with the Minnesota Court of Appeals. And for our first quarter, we probably have had double-digit increases in our filings. For the first time, we had our statistical analysis since we were last here to testify before this committee. For the first time, criminal is exceeding general civil. So the increase in criminal cases at the trial court is finally seeing its effect, and the increases in criminal filings at the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and that's just based on the current statutory language. As the committee fully knows, that we are the majority of us are people, and so any reduction in our budget results in the reduction in the number of people that are working to process the cases that we have filed to us. As you know, we don't have any option in regard to cases that come before us. We accept all appeals that are properly filed. And as a result of that, our responsibility is to resolve those cases as fairly and equitably and as expeditiously as possible. We've had an increase in the time on appeal in the last year, and I checked the information before I came, and that time on appeal is increasing day by day. We simply just don't have the staff and also the number of judges in order to be able to expeditiously handle the cases that are coming to us. And that is the reason why we are requesting for the additional retired judge funding. We are in the process of looking at the way in which we process some of our cases to see how we can even yet expeditiously resolve those also. And with that, I will stand for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Judge. Any questions at this point? There are none. Thank you.
To the final request, which is on slide 7, this is one that relates to all three levels of court and is critically important to the judiciary's ability to handle and meet the constitutional mandate of handling all cases promptly and without delay. And this is the funding that we need to maintain our current levels of staff in 100 locations around the state. As you know, the executive branch negotiates with its unions and its many thousands of employees for salary increases and health insurance benefits. The judiciary, a much smaller organization, pretty much follows what the executive branch negotiates. So whatever they negotiate, we have to pay. This request is to fund that increase for our employees. It is not a request for any new employees. It is just to keep the staff we currently have. Nearly 90% of the court's budget is personnel. So there is no way in non-personnel categories we could possibly absorb this expense. We are beyond the bone, as I've said, in terms of cuts to our operating budgets. So if we aren't able to get this funding, there is no place to go in our budget but to cut to staff and therefore services and support for judges and therefore the expedition of litigation through the court system. One thing that I think is important to note about this is that one-third of this total request is actually for health insurance costs. They're, as you know, increasing dramatically. We have no choice but to, you know, to pay those costs. I'd like to call on Judge Lynch, Ed Lynch, First Judicial District, to speak a little bit about the importance of the staff to what judging is all about and to public service.
Judge Lynch, good morning.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ed Lynch. I'm a judge in the First Judicial District and I'm chambered in Dakota County. The numbers that Sue has reviewed with you are important and compelling, but as I have said in the past, this is not about numbers. This is about people. It's about the people who work in and use the court system. And it is not just and is not primarily about the judges, the dedicated administrators, and the hardworking staff. It's about the over 2 million people who each year bring to the court some of the most important matters in their lives for a resolution. It is about abused spouses seeking protection, neglected children seeking safety, conflicting businesses seeking certainty, divorcing couples seeking finality, and injured people seeking stability. Who do we send away? Who do we ignore? Who do we delay? Those are the choices we will have to make if adequate funding is not provided and layoffs result. We cannot continue to provide timely services to these people if we lose additional staff. I can assure you that murderers and serious sex offenders will continue to command and consume an increasing proportion of available resources. These are serious matters and no one is suggesting that they do not deserve this attention. These resources invested in these cases, however, will have to be diverted from and consequently be unavailable to other deserving people. Unless adequate funding is provided, fewer resources and services will be available for the mother who came to the court for an order for protection after discovering her husband's journal that describes his plans and preparations to kill her and her children. Fewer resources and services will be available for the elderly man who lost a leg in an accident and cannot obtain needed medical services because the two companies that insure him cannot agree upon who is primarily responsible for payment. Fewer resources and services will be available for the preteen girl who was regularly beaten by her mother with an electric cord and who cries out in a letter to the court, "Please help me." The people who come to court have one common quest. They seek justice. Justice is a core function and primary responsibility of government. No one else can provide it. It deserves adequate funding, and it deserves your highest priority. I urge your support of the judicial branch budget request so that the court can continue to provide constitutionally mandated services and ensure that justice is available, accessible, and timely for everyone, and not just those charged with the most serious offenses. I know there are many worthy causes competing for the scarce resources before you this year. There are people who need health care, children who need education, and commuters who need roads. And I also know that you understand that justice is the foundation of society, the foundation that supports and makes possible education, health care, and roads. We need to keep the hardworking, dedicated employees now that we now have in the judicial branch in order to ensure that justice remains a strong foundation for the people of this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Any questions at this point? Representative Messler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Judge Lynch or Ms. DeSalle, I see that the trial court request has been modified downward. I'm wondering what the reason is for that and how that affects the percentage increase that is to the overall budget for the district courts.
Ms. DeSalle.
Mr. Chair and Representative Messler, we had included in our request, not knowing what would be in the governor's adjusted base, some costs related to the transfer of employees from county to state in the 6th and 10th districts. As it turns out, that funding was in the adjusted base, and therefore we did not have to ask for it in, say, change request. And so as soon as we identified that, we spoke with the chair and the staff to let them know that we would be reducing our change level request by $3 million.
Anything else? All right. Are we done?
Mr. Chair, that's it, and we stand for any other questions that you might have.
Any other general or any questions at this point? If not, I appreciate your time, all of you.
Thank you.
For coming
and
being
much
with us today.
Thank you.
I believe we're next going to hear from a budget review by the tax court in Minnesota, Judge George Perez. Judge, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'll keep it very brief. I know we have testified before, and just basically state for the committee that the tax court has a very lean budget, and that the only increases from the last biennium to this biennium are a complete reflection of cost of inflation, period. Our files, trials, and motions have all been going up steadily. I think it's the same reflection that you have heard earlier from the trial courts. The tax court has experienced similar increases as well. And we are making do with the limited staff that we have, which is comprised of three staff people and three judges statewide. The final point that I would add is that we have a website which has become an increasing tool of efficiency to provide and dispense more information to taxpayers, especially to the mom and pop, the non-representative pro se litigants. And we have made available the last 15 years of our decisions. We put all our forms, all the laws and rules that are necessary to proceed in tax court on the website. And we think that that's enabled a reduction and certainly a more efficient handling of cases. And we continue to seek technology to help us improve in that area. And that's really all I have to add at this point. We have just a We primarily agree with the governor's proposal. We are just slightly underfunded, and that's, I think, in the overall numbers, it's pretty de minimis. So I don't want to engage in any long discussion on that. It's between $25,000 and $50,000, and that's really what we're looking at. And again, that is a complete reflection of just inflation. There's no projects or programs or anything that's added on any biennium or yearly basis.
Judge Good, just give us a general reminder, a minute or so, of the genesis of the tax court, when you got started, and why you're of benefit to the state.
The tax court originated in 1939, and it was a part-time court. It became established as a full-time court in 1977. It is one of the leading tax courts in the country, and I attribute that to not only the tax court, but the Department of Revenue and the legislature. It plays all the role in that, and we are considered one of the top 10 courts in the country. There is a movement afoot to have, this is by the ABA, to have courts, tax courts established in states that do not have any. Roughly more than half of the states in the country have tax courts, and most of them are now moving towards that. And it's a form to expedite tax matters, property tax appeals, commissioner of revenue orders in cases that are decided. They used to be handled in district court, and there was up to a 10-year backlog back in the late 60s, early 70s, and that promulgated the making of the tax court into a full-time tax court. Within a year of the tax court becoming full-time, that backlog came down to 1 year. And primarily that's our goal now, to expedite cases within a year of their filing, first initial filing with the court.
You're the last judge in the room, so I can ask this question. Your operation, again, in roughly a little over half the states, but it's specifically in this one, judges heretofore, the district court judge bench would be hearing the cases you're hearing. Is that correct?
That's right.
And your existence allows a concentration of expertise of these matters to be focused, and thereby perhaps save time and error on the district court.
Yes, much like bankruptcy court. And I would add that tax court area has become increasingly complex. And when I started on the court 7-8 years ago, it was not uncommon to see cases, trials that would last maybe a day or two. Now it's not uncommon to see tax court cases last about 3 weeks. We just had one this past summer that went 3 weeks. It was in the papers. They're becoming more involved. There's just more litigation. There's more involvement. And those are all hours that certainly would be taken away from what earlier people have testified regarding murder and rape and other cases that require the kind of importance that district court judges see every day.
Judge, I don't need names, but on that 3-week trial, what form were the entities that were in court? Were they corporations?
Well, it was a corporation, but it also involves the state. There were high rises. It was not my case, but they were high rises in Minneapolis. And so it involved Hennepin County. It involved millions and millions of dollars, which would go one way or the other. So while there are large companies that may come to tax court, there are also major consequences for all the counties involved. And in this particular case, the county prevailed, and it certainly has significant consequences to their revenues. And so that this is an issue that is important for them to resolve, and it just highlights and underlines the importance of having experts involved from the beginning to the end of such a case.
In that case, was it the county or was it the private corporation that pursued and filed the case?
Well, as a result of the action taken by the county, it forced the corporation to take action.
So the corporation took action. Remind us again, for that 3 weeks, the filing fee to get that case before you was how much?
It was $135.
Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Paymark.
That was exactly the direction that I was going with my question, and I guess I just wanted to know if there's a constitutional provision regarding the filing fees that from one court to another. In other words, could the legislature direct the tax court, or could the tax court decide on increasing its filing fees?
Mr. Chair,
Paymar, Representative Paymar.
Representative Paymar, I also want to make one correction. I misspoke. The filing fee is $235, but your point is well made.
Close when you're talking, man.
Yes.
Go ahead, Judge.
I believe that the legislature has the authority to increase the filing fee that can disengage and be separate from district courts. It can maintain the same filing fee as it does now. Normally, what happens is that right now it's connected with the district court. So whenever the district court filing fee is increased, the tax court filing fee is increased correspondingly. But I do not see that there's any constitutional or other issue that would prevent this body, the legislature, to increase that. The only caveat I would say is that I don't know. There would have to be a little more study made so that we don't also penalize the mom and pops, who we have a fair number of those that also file before the tax court and require resolution on those cases as well, and so that they're not have to pay a heavy filing fee. But
Representative Paymar,
I assume by your line of questioning that you were thinking down a similar road, or
I can't read your mind, Representative Paymar, but I think we are.
Okay. And I'll assume that you are going to maybe do a little, or have staff do a little more research into this, because it seems to me unfair that a multi-million-dollar corporation can go into court and spend $235 for filing fee. Seems to me there could be a fairer, more equitable way of dealing with this that could help on the bottom line too.
I think it would be appropriate to explore the whole range of this issue relative to not just necessarily raising the filing fee alone, but whether there can be a tiered filing fee, whether we can directly focus the results of proposing to raise the fee so that it adjusts their needs before the general fund, for example. So we will be looking at this in the next few days. With your help, we'll try to find an answer. Any other questions of Judge Perez? If not, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members.
And the last item I believe we have for today is the Budget Review, Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission, Barbara Toombs, Executive Director. Ms. Toombs, please identify yourself again for the record, and this is a budget review, and brevity is preferred, but tell us what you need to, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Barb Toombs, Executive Director of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Our budget recommendation this year is $436,872 for the biennium. Which is the same allocation as we had during the previous biennium. However, what we've done is survived on carryover and salary savings for the last biennium. Our salaries alone, which represent about 93% of our agency's total operating, come around $3,379,495, leaving us approximately $56,000 to operate the agency on. And out of that comes $35,000 rent. So we're looking at operating costs of $1,000 for supplies, so forth. The agency has accommodated these. It's been able to exist basically by reducing staff. We reduced two positions since 2003, so it brought us down from 8 to 6, which is about a fourth of our staff. So basically, what our product is information, data. And the legislatures are customers. The prosecutors, defense attorneys are our customers. The probation officers are our customers. We are the providing information that is used for decision making. We will continue to operate. The quality of the information will not be compromised. I will not allow that to happen. One of the reasons I took this position and moved here was because this state has such a wealth of data. I mean, you have sentencing data from 1980, which is, you know, the longest there is in the United States. You have so much information. And this information should be used in a proper way to make policy decisions. And whatever decision you make on sentencing this year, and there will be some major ones with sex offenders and other things, really should be evaluated. I mean, when you make a change, you need to know what the result of that change is. And so those kind of things need to be considered. Every time you increase a crime to a felony level, that's another worksheet for us. Whether it's a prison population impact or not, it's a worksheet that comes into our office that has to be processed. We did 17,000 last year, so every new crime you move up towards a felony is something that our office is doing. So as these keep increasing, and even looking at your felony convictions going up from 10,000 in 2001 to 14,000 last year, and that's a 3,000 increase there in convictions, we're doing this with less people and still trying to give you quality and timely information. So I just would like you to keep that in mind. We're not asking for an increase. We will do what we need to do, but it may result in some slower production of information for you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So $35,000 for rent.
Yes.
Is there an increase in that?
No, actually, we moved last year, and we got a lower rent, and I locked into a five-year contract at a lower rent, so it would be like 1.2% over a period of 3 years. That was part of our contract.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Toombs.
That is important. To see what the legislation is really unlikely that if we did nothing, we would have any effects of that.
Anything further? Committee, I don't see anything further before us today. Therefore, this meeting is adjourned. Unless there's anything else to come before us, there is not. We'll adjourn for today. Thank you.